That's what Kol Ma'ariv Amar. You shouldn't hurry into Halacha. Why? Listen what he says carefully. He says like this. He says, "Ki berov devarim lo yechdal pesha." He says, "V'yachshov ki adavar keno." That's the question. What does hurry mean? Yeah, what's hurry and what's not hurry?
Right.
What's a hurry? Yeah. So how long does it take? 5 minutes? 10 minutes? Only want me to wait an hour? Wait an hour? I mean, what's the shiur? Right? That's the pshat. That's right. The pshat, what it means is like this. What it means is your response should be in line with your halachic reasoning, not in line with your emotion to respond. See, that's what it means. It means like this. It means if a person wants to respond, he's in line with his emotion to respond because he's yes to psak. So immediately he wants to respond. Naturally, he wants to show that he knows it. So every person has that quality. I mean, that quality always there. But Chazal recognized that what a person has to know that is there, and he has to deal with it. He should never be subservient to that emotion. That emotion is there, but he has to recognize the emotion, and he has to not abide by it. So what Chazal, that's what it means. I mean, of course, a person on a really high level doesn't have the emotion altogether. But the Chazal aren't talking to him, and in such a case, you don't have to give advice. It's speaking where a person has the emotion to respond, but what he should do is stop, analyze, know what part of him is related to that emotion, and he should only answer when logic dictates that this is the answer. That's what it means. Call a mabit var maybe fake. That's why he says like this. He says, because once he said it already, he's going to stop thinking. He's going to try to justify. He's going to think that it really is so. Actually, the only reason he said it was because he was overcome by the emotion. Once he said it already, now he has to protect himself. Because he doesn't want to lose. He's under the same emotion, just the other side of the same emotion. And therefore, he's going to have to make a mistake. So what should legislate when he answers? Only the ideas. Wait a minute. So Chazal had a way of teaching people to recognize the emotion and look at it and know how to handle it. I have that emotion. Now, somebody asked me a question. Now, what am I supposed to do? Wait just a minute. That's not the right emotion. Let me understand what the halacha is first. Push it aside, recognize what the halacha is, answer when the time comes, when the proper time is according to your halachic knowledge, and then you won't make any, then your chance of error is small. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah. There is one more Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah learns different pshat than the Rambam did. Our pshat of din and emes and shalom, the whole pshat that we gave really, is according to the Rambam, that it's the society. And two things you need to say. You need din, you need the MS and the shalom. Okay, three things. But Rabbeinu Yonah learns that the MS is different. He says it's referring to an individual. It's an interesting Rabbeinu Yonah. He says like this. Rabbi Shimon Gamal Omer, Ashtosh Dvar Malam Kayem, Ala Din, Shiyodan Din MS Lamito, that a person should be done a true din, fine. Valo MS. What is MS? And actually over here, he says something that I one time heard the Rav say in the name of Reb Chaim. I never knew it was Rabbeinu Yonah, but he says the exact same thing. He says, "Emes, what is emes? Sheyesh la'odom loleches bedarkei." There's a mistake here. It should be bedarkei Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Shehu emes v'saroso emes v'holech bedarkei Hashem gam kein yelech ba'oso aderech shenemar v'alachta bedracha. The mitzvah says the Torah is v'alachta bedracha. You follow the ways of God. Now, v'amru Chazal she'afilu sipur dvarim ba'alma ain lo lodl mashaka. What did I say? These mechavim to Reb Chaim, because the question was the one time asked Reb Chaim or Reb Chaim Meizer asked Reb Chaim. I think it was Reb Chaim Meizer. Reb Chaim says the Gemara says in Kiddush in Bavetzia that there's three cases of Talmud Chacham is let a lie. There's three cases of Talmud Chacham let tell a lie. So, for instance, they ask you how many Gemaras you know. So you're allowed to lie. If you know 20, you're allowed to say you know one, or you don't know any, whatever. You're allowed to lie. So the Reb Chaim says, what do you mean? In the Dvar Sheket Tirchak, Torah says, not allowed to tell a lie. So Reb Chaim answers, he said, no. He says, Midvar Sheket Tirchak is not listed as a mitzvah lo sasei, a mitzvah sasei. It's not listed in one of the mitzvahs. So it comes under the mitzvah of Alachta Bedrachav. It should go in the ways of God, and one of the ways is emes. So what Chazal is saying is, that here you have a conflict. Another way of God is anivus. So here you have a conflict between anivus and between emes. So which one is better? So Chazal paskin anivus is better. See, that's why it's not a kasha. But you see the way Rabbeinu Yonah classifies it is the same way that Rav Chaim said, because he says va'al ha'emes. He doesn't say midvar sheketecha. He says sheyesh lodom malachas bedarkei Hakadosh Baruch Hu shu emes v'taraso emes. He says va'holech bedarkei Hashem yedach bo'sader shenema va'olachta bedrocha. He classifies it under va'olachta bedrocha. It's not a separate mitzvah. It goes under the general mitzvah of Olachta Bedrocha. Then he says like this. V'amur Chazal say an interesting story. She'afilu sipur dvarim ba'alma ein lo la'adam l'shaker. That even stam talk, the person's just talking, things that are unimportant, he shouldn't falsify them. Kahu uvda debrei derav. The Gemara has a case in Yevamos that there was a certain Amira had a wife that whatever he used to ask her, if she'd ask him, what do you want for supper? So he'd say beans, so she'd give him the other dish. He had another dish he used to ask for. It was some type of something with vinegar in it, some type of dish. He'd ask her for the vinegar dish, she'd give him beans. So what happened is, so one day he told his son, go ask mommy for beans. So he came back with beans. So he said, boy, he says, you know, your mother really is getting much better. So his son said, no. He says, I know whenever you ask for one thing, she always gives you the opposite. So I told her the vinegar dish. That's why she gave you the beans. So I switched it. So he said, a quote, he quoted a, he says, that's what people say. Quote in the world. The world, they say that there are different aphorisms in the time of Chazal. You know, it's like you have aphorisms today. People in the world are intelligent. They have different sayings. And Chazal were always prone to quote some of these sayings of the world. Kacha Amar Enshi, people say. But one of the things people say is that from you comes out someone who's more intelligent than you are and advises you. And a person has a son, and the son is more intelligent, and he gives the father more advice, and makes the father more intelligent. So he says, so that's what he says. He says, Rashi says, I should have thought of that myself, he said. I should have thought of that myself. And you taught me something. So it's interesting. Why didn't he think about it? I mean, he's talking about an Amora. I mean, he couldn't think about a simple thing like that. What?
Yeah.
The answer is because really he wasn't that. They weren't that involved. He wasn't that. It wasn't that important to him really. If a person involved in this food, believe me, he'll think about it very quickly.
Why?
Sees this, he always gets the opposite. He'd rather have beans. Didn't think about it. Never thought into it really. It shows you the level of their existence. They really didn't. They weren't concerned enough even to think into it. But when his son did it, he says, "Yeah, no, it's a good idea." So he said, but after he told him this whole thing, that's money is. He said, "Va'at lo savid," but you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it anyway. He says, "Why mishum shenema?" Because the pasuk says, "Limdu lishonam dvar sheker." They taught their tongues false statements, false things. So first, his father gave him, he gave him a compliment, but then he said, "But still, don't do it," because the pasuk says, "Limdu lishonam dvar sheker." He says, "So you shouldn't do it." He says, why? So Rabbeinu Yonah says, Ki ha'odam ha'margu l'shono l'daber sheker. B'dovar she'en bo lo hefsu lo telus. A person that gets used to saying lies in something that's unimportant. He says, Gam yovo l'daber dvarim shel ikr. Gam ki yovo l'daber dvarim shel ikr lo yuchal loma ha'emes. He says, even when it comes to important things, he's not going to say the truth. Ki fihu ha'medaber v'ha'hergul sholet alav. Because he's going to be used to saying lies already, and he's going to lie even on unimportant things. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. So of course, there's one question to ask on the Rabbeinu Yonah. What's the question? No. What's the question you have to ask on Rabbeinu Yonah? Memanashah. If you're going to tell me that you're supposed to speak the truth in everything, even in unimportant things, so then why does Rabbeinu Yonah say that you shouldn't speak the... the Torah says, Ki Emes, God is Emes. So God is Emes, so therefore everything should be Emes. Even if you want beans or you want vinegar. I mean, you should always speak the truth. So why does he say that you shouldn't? And actually, that's the pasuk. The pasuk is Limdu Lashonam Dvar Sheker. They taught themselves to lie. You see? What do you mean they taught themselves to lie? They tell lies. No. Apparently, he's learned from that pasuk that you shouldn't lie in small things because that'll lead to lying in big things. But if you're going to say that God is MS, so MS should be even in small things. That's
justice,
number one.
The justice situation.
And if you're going to say that what? It's not important in the small things, but that the small things are not a question of MS or not, but MS we have to reserve for big things, so then why can't I tell lie in small things? I mean, well, Mamanasha. If MS encompasses small things too, so then you have to tell the truth in small things. If it doesn't encompass small things, it only encompasses big things, but for some reason small things are left out of the category of MS, so then what's wrong with the lying in small things? Right? What do you say?
Don't go like that.
Don't see it all. But according to the way the Rabbeinu Yonah explains it, comes out that what he means was that it's okay, really, to do it over here, because it's not important. But why isn't it? What do you mean it's not? Who cares if it's important or not? The question is true and false. No, I speak falsely. This is false. And if you're going to tell me that this is really not considered false, so then what does it mean you're afraid he's going to speak falsely with regard to important matters? In other words, if important matters are the realm of the true and the false, so then this isn't the realm of the true and the false. So it's not going to transcend the border. And if you tell me that the realm of the true and the false is anything, which logically it seems it should be, so then why do you have to say because he's going to speak falsely about important matters? You just say simply that this is false. Now let's speak falsely. What does he mean? Yeah, Beis Shammai says, Kala Kamos Shehi. And Beisul says, Kala Nova Chasuda. Why? Because Machlekes, whether Beis Shammai holds Midvar Sheket Tirchok, not let alone. So now I say, Kala Nova Chasuda. So you see, even though that's not such an important thing, but you're not allowed to do it. So you see that Dvar Sheket Tirchok means anything which is Sheker. Okay, so the thing is like this. What I want to say is like this. A different concept. That really there is no value in truth and falsehood, or lies. Our concept of lies is really not a correct one. In other words, we think of a lie as something which is simply not true. What I want to say is like this, that there is no value in the truth in those terms per se. There is no value. In other words, when we say that a person has to know the truth, MS does not really mean the same thing that we ordinarily think of. As we think, if you say, for instance, that this floor has a crack in it, or it doesn't have a crack in it, it's a question of truth or falsehood. But I want to say it like this, that there is, that really, that's not so. It's not a, what do I care really if the floor is this way or that way? You see, truth has to be, there has to be a purpose in truth. Truth isn't just a matter of fact. Not just a matter of fact. But what is the value in truth? Truth has a value. The value is reality. That's the value. In other words, the value in truth, what we mean by truth, really, is our relationship to reality and how we perceive reality. That's what truth means. So that whether something is so or is not so doesn't really matter per se. Like you told, say, oh, you told a lie. That's because we have a wrong idea of a lie. As long as it wasn't so, we say it's a lie. Really, that's not the case.
A lie means a distortion of our perception of reality. There is no value per se in a fact, in factual truth. I have to distinguish between one I'll call factual truth. That's the way everybody commonly understands something, that there's a leaf on the tree or there's not a leaf on the tree. It's a factual truth. There is, most people think that's what it means. That you mustn't tell a lie means you mustn't change a fact. What I'm saying is that this is a different concept of the truth. Truth is not factual truth. There's no value per se in the fact, a given fact, that it's so or whether it's so or whether it's not so. But the only concept of truth and falsehood is what our knowledge and perception of reality is. If a person has a distorted concept of reality, that's the evil of falsehood. And if he, insofar as he has an accurate idea of reality, that's the benefit of truth. So truth and falsehood really can only be measured in terms of what your knowledge and your perception of reality is. That's basically what. In other words, it's not a question of just telling a lie or telling a truth. That's a simplistic notion. That's a childish notion. Say the truth, you didn't say the truth. The car went down the street, it didn't go down the street. That doesn't matter. There's no, that's a fact. Factual truth doesn't matter. What is important is when we say that truth has such a great value in Yadus, what it really means is your perception of reality. That's why the Rambam says that if a person makes a mistake with regard, the higher a thing is that a person makes a mistake. In other words, a person makes a mistake with regard to an individual, a human being, that's one level of error. Makes a mistake with regard to a malach, that's a higher level. Has a wrong notion over there, that's a higher level. See, it's the worst distortion of reality. And if he makes a mistake, the worst mistake that he can make is with relationship to God. That's why the Torah constantly tries to, the essence of the Torah, I mean, is bit love odazara and to establish the true idea of God. That's why that's so important, because that's the ultimate reality. A mistaken with regard to something which is the source of the ultimate reality, every mistake over there has to pervade the entire reality. And if you make a mistake in a lesser area, so it's not as serious. Now, what I'm saying is there is no value per se in truth or falsehood. The only value that there is insofar as your knowledge of reality is concerned. That's the only value of truth. But it's not a value per se. A fact, like factual truth, really is not important. Important is how I perceive reality. So therefore, Rabbeinu Yonah says it like this: that what the Gemara meant was, in terms of reality, in terms of perception of reality, it really makes no difference whether his father wanted beans or he wanted the other dish. It makes no difference at all. Because in terms of one's perception of reality, it absolutely is meaningless. So therefore, to tell a lie like that per se is not bad. That itself really isn't bad. Nothing wrong with it. It's not something which affects a person's perception of reality. Of course, I want you to understand something. That every single fact in the universe has a relationship to the whole of reality. We're not denying that. That is true. Everywhere. But to be, it's beyond the human mind to be able to perceive. Only God could perceive has such knowledge of every single fact, every single detail. Like whether a bird is on the tree or it's not on the tree, to us really in our perception of reality doesn't make any difference. But God knows whether that bird is on the tree or not, because actually this fact that the bird is on a tree is a part of the whole Bria's Olam. If we saw the whole system, you'd know why the bird has to be on the tree in that particular time. But that's God's knowledge. That's not human knowledge. Human knowledge isn't there. It has no way of... it's a different perception, like the Rambam says. A different kind of knowledge altogether to have such a precise knowledge. Man can never have such a precise knowledge. So therefore, small details with regard to man's perception of reality don't make any difference. So if a person will tell you, will lie to you, will tell you that the bird is, I saw a bird on a tree, and there was no bird on a tree, so it really is meaningless. It's not really considered false insofar as man is concerned. Plus, who cares? What difference does it make? Theoretically, there's no difference. His perception of reality hasn't changed. And actually, it's a meaningless fact. A meaningless fact, with regard to a meaningless fact, there is no value, no difference whether you say, whether you speak the truth or whether you speak falsely. Now, I want you to say, I mean, this is something that may go against the grain of your emotions, basically, because you're raised to believe that it's something bad and telling a lie per se, see? But actually, it's not true. There's nothing wrong with it. However, what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is like this. I would call that, what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying like this, that there is, you see, what does the Pasuk say? Limdu l'shonam dvar sheker. What does it mean? You see, a person by nature does really consider truth and false in those terms. He would consider it just as much a lie to tell you that the bread is on the table when it isn't, as if he would tell you a lie with regard to an important matter, a theoretical matter, which would really change your perception of reality. Because a person has a certain psychological relationship to truth and falsehood that people have. Certain emotional, psychological relationship to truth and falsehood. A person, they consider it a lie. The man's a liar. He told me that the bread was here. It's not. He's a liar. See? So even though it doesn't change his perception of reality, but that's the way people, it's a psychological way of looking at the truth and falsehood. So really, the truth, what we should say is that who cares about that? Who cares about that? I mean, the main thing is our concept of truth and falsehood. And incidental facts that really don't warp or twist reality, I don't care if you change them. But it says no, you shouldn't do it. Limdu l'shonam dvar sheker. What does it mean? It means that this concept of psychological truth should also be heeded. Why? Because if you don't, so then you're going to lose an emotion which is in favor, which is a good emotion, which is in favor of establishing reality in its proper way. In other words, there's a certain emotion. You see, most of the world has this emotion towards truth and falsehood. Certain psychological emotion towards truth and falsehood. Any fact is considered important, just as important. A small lie, big lie, it's a lie. See? So what the Rabbeinu Yonah says is that psychological... That psychological perception of truth and falsehood, which is really wrong, philosophically it's ridiculous. But he says you should not try to break that emotion. Even though it's only an emotion, you should not try to break it. Why? Because if you do, then you're removing an ally in favor of, which is beneficial, in favor of perceiving reality in a true way when it comes to important matters. So limdu l'shonam dvar sheker means that even when it comes to a small fact, you shouldn't change it. Even though actually there's no harm done. But you shouldn't do it. Why? Because that emotion is a good emotion. The emotion that insists on telling the truth, even by things which are incidental, that emotion is one that should be preserved. Because it's one which is beneficial, because it is in line with, it's an ally in making sure that we don't distort reality when it's important. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. That's what he told the son. So even though it's unimportant, and you're smart, that's why first he commended him. That's very smart, and it's unimportant, you did the right thing, but you shouldn't do it for another reason. Because limdu l'shonam dvar sheker, which means that that from this, if you're going to break away from that emotion of truth and falsehood, which is psychological truth and falsehood, then eventually you're liable to... You're setting yourself up for a situation where if there are powerful forces in the opposite direction, you won't have that ally to protect you. That's what he told him. That's what he said. Hashem elokecha emes. Lo, it's a person should be mitzaref elokim to emes. Because it says that Hashem elokim emes, the pasuk says. So emes, of course, means, what does it mean Hashem elokim emes? It means he's the source of reality. That's what it means. So the shalom bias is a matter on the psychological, but it could be even more than that, really. Because shalom bayis is more than just a, is more than just an incidental. Because it's a, yeah, it's a certain psychological reality. How one person relates to another person is a is also a matter of reality. That's why you have the machlokes where Beis Shammai says midvar sheker tircha. He doesn't quote the pasuk over here. Limdu l'shon midvar sheker. He doesn't quote that pasuk. Why does he quote midvar sheker tircha? Because there it is a distortion. You're distorting a psychological reality. You're distorting reality for the person. You're telling them that that she's beautiful, she's not. So you're distorting reality. It's a distortion. That's a distortion. That already, even though that's a smaller distortion, it's not a philosophical distortion, but it is a distortion of reality. So that's a psychological distortion, right? So over there, the Beis Hillel says other considerations. Question of social justice, what to do? We're paskin that he's a mutter, he should distort. But the over there, it is a question of halacha, because there is a reality over there. It's not like this. Whether it's beans, whether he wanted beans or whether he wanted the other dish, is not even a psychological factor. You understand what I mean? It's simply a meaningless distortion. It's a meaningless lie. But when you lie to a person, let's say for instance a person buys something, tell him it's good and it's no good, that's already changing his reality vis-a-vis that object. Could be it's an emotional area, but it's an area of reality. Over here you're not changing anything. There's nothing's changed over here. That's why the Gemara didn't quote the pasuk midvar sheker tirchak over here, and it quotes the pasuk in Ksubas midvar sheker tirchak. Over here it's lamdu l'shanu midvar sheker, lamdu l'shanu midvar sheker. It's a different thing. But if you lie to a person and you tell him something about it, you tell him his friend likes him when he doesn't like him, that already is a distortion of the man's reality, because a man lives in psychological reality. You're distorting his framework. That's already midvar sheker tirchak. Any distortion which is a meaningful distortion is midvar sheker tirchak. Doesn't necessarily have to be a philosophical one. If it's meaningful insofar as the person's life is concerned, that's already considered midvar sheker tirchak. But if it's meaningless, like in this case, absolutely meaningless, then it's a limdu l'shon midvar sheker. That's why the Gemara over there doesn't quote this pasuk, quotes the other pasuk, midvar sheker tirchak. So the nea shalom really sometimes can be more than just a psychological. Could be an actual change. You're actually distorting the framework of reality. But there you're allowed to distort it. There you have opposing considerations, so you're allowed to distort it. That's what the Gemara says. Okay. This is a side point. When you tell a person a lie, one is a distortion of reality, and there's another thing that is you insult his intelligence. See, there's a certain personal emotional insult when you tell a person something that's false. You insult it, when you distort, if you distort reality, you rob him of reality. So it's a personal insult. It's an insult to his intelligence. Tell him something that's false. Aside from whatever effects might happen. So that's what he told him. He said that was the isnatzlus. He weakened. He says, true, it doesn't make any difference. But the fact is, I wouldn't tell you something that's completely false. Anyways. So that gives the person a certain sense of dignity. If you tell a person a lie, it actually you're violating his sense of dignity. A certain sense of dignity. You're telling me something's completely false. What am I, a fool? You're telling me this crazy thing? It's not. So I wouldn't tell you a lie. There really was true, but I just didn't mention anything else. So it's, in terms of the effect, you're right. But it was. He didn't want Avimelech to feel that the personal insult of telling a lie. That's a different thing. That's why. That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's why. That's very good. That's very good. that's good. That's true. When you read that passage, you wonder why did he say that every place that we're going to go, call a makom hashenava shama. That's right. You're right. That's a very good extension. So you see that it was also to remove the personal sting. Right. That's right. Yeah, Yoni asked a good question. The question is, there are a lot of emotions that could be allies for keeping mitzvahs. I mean, but you don't find really that they should endorse any one of them. Over here, it's an interesting thing. Like this, I can't think of any other case offhand where you say that we should maintain a certain emotion. I mean, I don't know of any case where you really try to establish an emotion where Chazal just say that you should establish the emotion across the board. This is it. This is an unusual thing. It is an unusual thing. This emotion is a good one. Because as long as it's something which is in line with reality, then you should maintain it. You should maintain it. Why not? I mean, Avi mentioned an important point that that of course it has a drawback, that it makes things that are small things, petty things, seem important. So you have to say that in terms of the overall situation, that a person is better at maintaining it, because since the most important thing in a person's life is what reality is, what the truth is. And this is a barrier against distortion of reality, so therefore it is worthwhile maintaining it, because it leads him to be honest in his perception of reality, and it is more beneficial to be maintained. That's what they hold. That's what they hold. You see, actually, the truth of the matter is that it's very important, because since it leads to a person to cling to the truth, he will, that emotion itself will actually turn on itself and recognize that these small things are unimportant, since its objective is to know what reality is, to know what the truth is. So that's why they say it should be maintained. It's not harmful, because it actually will turn on itself. In other words, the that which is bad that emerges from it, because he's making unimportant things seem important, when he recognizes that, that very emotion will prevent him from making that distortion. Since it's something which is, since it is an emotion which is in favor of the truth and in favor of reality, it should be preserved, because ultimately it's the only time you have something like that. You know, it's the only time you have something like that. Because every other emotion has nothing to do with reality. This is an emotion that's in line with reality. That's what Basil really answered. What did Basil say? What does it mean? Means that before the person buys it, tell him, don't want to be distorted. But now it's too late, so he's better off really not perceiving reality precisely the way it is. And that's what they poskin. They said he's right. So Bishanai said you're right. He's better off. So therefore it's not a philosophical distortion of reality. It's psychological. Even psychologically you're not supposed to do it, because a person has his bechira, you're not supposed to interfere with it. But over here it's too late. So he's better off not knowing. Michelle, you said a good thing. That, of course, it's not... The person in this situation over here, it's not simply that the person fools himself with this emotion. He should be aware that he's supporting the emotion, which means he's not completely away from reality. The emotion is only a means. The emotion is... He shouldn't be fooled into thinking that this really is reality. But he should recognize that he's utilizing this emotion in order that in the future he should be able to be an honest investigator in important areas. You should realize that. You should realize he's utilizing the emotion. I mean, there's no question about that. The Gemara doesn't mean the emotion should have power over you. That we never have a thing like that. It means that he should recognize he's using the emotion. There's nothing wrong with it. Psychological reality is the important reality is the philosophical reality. That's the important reality. The psychological reality is important insofar as it benefits the person and gives him the basis for which to operate so that he could reach the ultimate reality. Now, sometimes it's better for a person to not to see the reality. It'll function better. It'll be a better means for him to perceive the ultimate reality. So what it shows over there really is basically what we're saying, that the truth of the matter is not a matter of a lie. See, people who have an immature idea about telling a lie, they wouldn't be able to tell a lie even in the case of Shalom. Can't tell a lie. It's a lie. There is no value per se in telling the truth, and no evil per se in a lie. The evil is only in terms of how the person's framework of ultimate reality is going to be affected. So if you know, for instance, that if you take away from a person certain facts, and by removing these facts from him, you'll put him in a better situation for him to perceive a philosophical truth and be in a better frame of mind, then you should do it. And that's the case Menei HaShoah. That's the case Menei HaShoah. That even though he doesn't really understand how vicious his wife is, but now that he thinks that she's good, so he's going to like her, he'll be happy with her, he'll live happily, he'll be satisfied. So that's very good. So you improved his framework. So he improved his framework in from which he could operate. Well, it goes both ways. So you benefited him. You benefited him. The important thing is in terms of the ultimate reality, man's perception of the ultimate reality. That's the important thing. It's not a question of a lie in the truth per se. That's what you see. That's what Yadis holds. Okay? Even though they say you should not lose that emotional attachment to the lie in truth per se. Shouldn't lose it. Of course, it's a good thing. Let me ask you a steer between two psukim, okay? A steer, it goes back to the area of Lashon Hara, but I don't think we should really leave without mentioning it. The pasuk, one pasuk says like this. The Rambam quoted before a pasuk that said that in Tehillim. Steer between two psukim. One pasuk like this. Asher amru l'shonenu nagbir sifasenu itanu miyadon lanu. The Gemara says from this that a person is misaper Lashon Hara, he denies God. It's kafir biker. Why? Because he says like this. He says, Asher amru l'shonenu nagbir. They said that our tongue, our speech, will give us strength. Sifasenu itanu. We have our lips, we have our words. Miyadon lanu. Who's over us? Who's above us? Now, what is the implication of this pasuk? What does it mean? It means simply. How do you understand the pasuk? Why is it? What are they saying with regard to the Lashon Hara? These people. Plain implication would seem to be that they're using their words to achieve their own goal, to destroy somebody. Right? Okay. Now, there's another pasuk. Pasuk in Kohelet says like this. If the snake will bite without venom, and there is no benefit for a person who talks Lashon Hara. So the Gemara says, Lasid Lavo miskaptos kolachayos, all the animals will get together, Lasid Lavo, Ubo says al Nachash, and they'll come to the snake. And they'll say like this, a lion mauls and eats. And a bear tears and eats. You, what enjoyment do you have from what you do? From putting the venom into the other animal? So Omar Lehem, he said like this, V'chima Yisran Labala Lashon. What benefit does the person have who speaks Lashon Hara? So that's what the Gemara says. The implication would seem to be that a person does not benefit from Lashon Hara. Yet the implication from the other pasuk in Tehillim is no, that Asher Amru Lulshamin Nagbir Svasenu Eternu Miyadolano, that they're going to use their speech in order to destroy somebody, and that's so they're benefiting. They're benefiting from it. So how can you say Vein Yisrael Baal Lashem? Vein Yisrael Baal Lashem means there is no benefit. The other pasuk condemns him for he can't condemn both ways. One pasuk condemns him because of the fact that he's destroying somebody. So he's relying on his own strength. Not relying on, he doesn't care about God. The other pasuk says that the Lashon Hara is bad because there is no benefit. I mean, either there's no, you can't get it both ways. It's the same, what kind of a question is this? You ask me why the person speaks Lashon Hara? Very simple. Asher Amru Lushonenu Nagbir, because they want to destroy the other guy, that's the benefit. It's just like the lion. I think what Chazal mean here is like this. Asher Amru L'Shanenu Nagbe means we will perform Gevura with our words. So that's already the Gevura means you have opponents that you're fighting and you're going to be victorious through your Lashon. So that's a purpose. There's a purpose in it. Good. Yeah. The thing is like this. That what Chazal is saying is that there's a subtle emotion behind Lashon Hara. That there is an emotion that through, actually in reality does nothing. It's not talking about where a person tries to knock somebody down. That's already, we said it's like Motzei Shema already, where a person wants to uses his language in order to accomplish a specific goal. That's not really Lashon Hara. That's not the emotion of Lashon Hara. But Chazal say that behind the emotion of Lashon Hara is a primitive sense of strength. That by the mere fact that he's speaking Lashon Hara about the other person, he's destroying him. See? The in other words, a person feels, it satisfies a certain primitive emotion that by downplaying the other person, by making him something bad, that he's already gained. He feels he's gained. He feels a gain just from the activity itself. Yeah, that's what it means. Asha amru l'shanenu nagbir sfasenu itanu mi adamanu. And that's why he's a kofer biker. He's a kofer biker because what he's doing is he realizes, he feels a certain sense of strength and security and assurance in verbalizing his emotion, his destruction of the other person. That's really what it. That's really what it is. Chazal Shem, there's a subtle emotion behind Lashon Hara, certain sense of power that he has in saying Lashon and speaking Lashon Hara. Not in reality. It's not a realistic thing to talk about. It's a certain psychological phenomenon. Psychologically, he feels that way. That's why I say it's Kofa Baker. Because he's away from reality. He's completely away from reality. He's involved with the power of his own verbalization. He feels a certain sense of power through the mere verbalization. It's not a rational thing through objectives. That's why he's a Kofa Baker. Kofa Baker means where he's involved in a certain primitive narcissistic emotion, which is away from reality. That's Kofa Baker. It's related to a sense of his own omnipotence. It's a certain feeling of omnipotence that he has, and that's behind the Lashon Hara. A certain feeling of omnipotence is false. See? It's false from reality. It's not a logical thing, but it's an emotional thing. That feeling of omnipotence that he senses in himself is a Kofa Baker. It's a tie to the sasha with the real omnipotence. So that's why there's no stira. Because my yisrael b'al lashon means that he has no actual benefit. They're speaking the logical way to approach him. What are you doing this for? There's no logical gain, right? But there are certainly emotional gains. And one of the emotional gains is that he feels a certain sense that he's just by talking, his enemies are being somehow or other destroyed, you see. The last Rabbeinu Yossi is Va'al HaShalom. Va'al HaShalom. Shalom, he says, what does it mean? Three things. Din, and this is Shalom. It says, Shalom hu kolel l'chol tov. Shalom includes, is a universal for all good. Shabbalom, all good in the world. Vein tachlis l'tov alasa. And there is no objective to its benefit. It is the ultimate objective. V'shalom Yisrael. Okay. Now, what is he saying, really? In other words, what is he saying, basically? He's saying that Shalom has no objective, because Shalom really means harmony. It's a state of harmony. That's what Shalom is. Yeah, it's a state of harmony. Osa Shalom b'mromov, we ask Shalom alayna. Osa Shalom b'mromov is paskin in Iyiv. It means the universe is harmony. There's no the universe is works in an harmonious system. People don't. People are not. People are in conflict. And human society is in conflict, because man himself is in conflict. So Shalom, when you ask for Shalom, you're really asking for the ultimate objective there. When you say that if man would work with harmony, would function harmoniously, internally, and with regard to the whole society, that's it, there's nothing more. Then that means you cannot have any more improvement. Because that means the mind is working where it's supposed to work, the emotions are working where they're supposed to work, the body works, everything is being done perfectly. That's Shalom, that's peace, everything's harmonious, no conflict. Conflict is when one system overrides the other system. So that's really what causes the problems. That's why he says, Shalom, there's no to'elos for Shalom. Shalom is the ultimate. That's why we say that Shalom is really Shem Hashem. That's what it means to say Shem Hashem. It says, Shir Hashem Hashem Shlomo. It means a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right. So why is a Kodesh Baruch Hu Shalom? Because he's the source of all harmony. Source of all harmony. That's Chachma, his Chachma is the source of all harmony. That's the highest level. Shalom's the highest objective. That's what he means by being honest. But, that's perfection. There's only one problem with this pshat. What's the problem with this pshat? One problem. Why is it one of the three? How can you say that the Olam is Kayim on, that the Olam is Kayim on three things? Din, Emes, and Shalom. Yeah, I mean, Shalom is everything. It's universal, includes everything. So what do you need the other two for? That's why you have Sim Shalom at the end of the tefillah. Sums up everything. Everything can be summed up in Shalom. To reach a state of harmony. That's the essence of it. Because Sim Shalom Tov Avrecha is really the essence of Birchas Kohanim. Yeah. Okay, in other words, I guess, there are two, let's take the two. The two that I can understand is the Emes and the Shalom. That I can understand. No, yes. A man, in man, there is there's the ability within man to attach himself to the abstract good. Person wants something, he sees he gets it, he's not satisfied, he's not happy with it, so he has the ability to say, look, forget about this thing, I'm going to, I need something else, try something else. So he has in the back of his mind, he has an idea of what the good is. That's shalom. That's shalom. Because shalom is kol tov shebo'olam. The good. It is the ultimate good. So there's a concept of the ultimate good in the human mind. And if it wasn't for the fact that there was that concept of the ultimate, the good in the human mind, then we could never really exist. Because then we'd be destroyed. You can see right away, you'd be attached to one emotion, attached to one thing. You couldn't change, that would be it. So the fact that man has the ability to attach himself to an abstract idea of the good is what preserves him, what gives him the ability to exist. Now, then there's another, but that's not enough. There has to be also, he has to have emes also. Emes means that he has an attachment to truth. If he didn't have an attachment to truth, then he would never be able to arrive at any good, because he wouldn't be able to set up his objective standards of reality to know, to be able to gain knowledge. And if he wouldn't have that knowledge, he wouldn't be able to know what the good is, to be able to know how to get to the good. He would just be a man, a strand that has a desire for the good. That's it. But the fact that he has a desire for truth, the good actually is really a subjective thing, that he has a desire for the good. But the truth is really objective. He has the ability to be objective about reality. To say that regardless of what it is, this is what it is. He just has a love for reality per se. So it's really these two trends. It's really the love of reality, of describing a certain objective reality, plus his desire for the good that permits him to have any kind of perfection. So actually, it's those two trends that are responsible for a person being able to exist in a proper way. That's why you have that's what it means by the emes and the shalom. It's an interesting thing. Emes and shalom really are two big meters. Emes and shalom, emes v'shalom ahavo. Right. See that those two things, how do they work together? They work together. Because shalom is a desire for the good. And emes is the ability to withdraw and just to see what objective reality is. Now, emes v'shalom ahavo is good. You see why you need both of them. You need emes, you need shalom. Emes really is the intellectual perfection, knowledge. And shalom is the desire for the good. Shalom is virtue and emes is knowledge. Knowledge and virtue. You can't have virtue without knowledge. And if you just have knowledge and there's no desire for virtue, so then there's no perfection either. That's what emes and shalom is really. That is different. In terms of society, you can understand it, but in terms of the yachid, it's a little difficult. What do I mean? She yodun din emes lamito. You could understand what he was saying is like, that you need din. Din means that he has to have a din. Actually means where you set up a universal. So he has to set up a certain universal for his conduct. But the mashmos, the implication of she yodun din emes lamito seems to be, yeah. Now that raises a question, what the Rabbeinu Yonah means by din. I mean, it would be easy to say that din is the social order, and then you need these other two. Social order gives you the basis, the substance in which to function, and then you need these two things, emes and shalom. But he doesn't seem to, his lashon doesn't seem to indicate that. So we'll have to leave that point. Okay. Now up to the next pair. There's just one more thing I want to mention. That now that we, last week we mentioned about Lashon Hara again, we mentioned the idea that that it does cater to a certain element, primitive element in man, of his egomania, that he can control his idea, that he can control things through his speech. That would explain really the Chazal that says that if a person finds that he talks Lashon Hara and he's nichshal in that chait, so what he should do is yakten satzma, make himself small. Why? Because since it stems from the sense, the overpowering sense of his own omnipotence. So that's really one of the main emotional sources for Lashon Hara, is that sense of his own omnipotence. That's why Chazal say very beautifully that if the person is involved, finds that he's involved in Lashon Hara, what should he do with his Talmud Chacham so the Gemara Association involve himself in Torah? Of course, that will remove him from that'll cure everything. He's involved in Torah, he's in the world of reality, and he sees Chachmas Hashem, and he recognizes the greatness of God, and he recognizes his own smallness, and the Rambam says that that's the best. But if he can't do that, so then what should he do? So Chazal say, Yaktin es atzmo, he should make himself little. Belittle himself in his own eyes. Why? Why is that the antidote to Lashon Hara? Because what we mentioned last week, that it's based upon his own sense of omnipotence. So that's why Yaktin es atzmo is the cure. Okay. Next pair.